Noah Cannon is the undergraduate student coordinator with the UA Safe Zone. He's also our guest here on Capstone News Now. Welcome back, Noah.
Thank you for having me, Rich.
Now, I must say, you are sporting the pink hair this afternoon, which is a new addition. How did that come about?
Boredom, and now I'm easier to spot in crowds.
I was going to say, you're not going to be...
logistical.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Your professor is definitely going to know your name if you're in a big lecture hall.
Yeah, that's been a problem in this class.
Well, we brought Noah on here, and as usual, I don't think this is the first time this has happened. We have Noah, and then breaking news happens just before we have Noah come on. And this one has to do with what's going on in Texas. A U.S. Federal judge has, earlier this afternoon, just struck down the state of Texas's longstanding same-sex marriage ban. We're just getting this off the wire here. Judge Orlando Garcia, he wrote, and this is in his opinion, without a rational relation to a legitimate government purpose, state-imposed inequality can find no refuge in our United States Constitution. That's some pretty strong language there from a federal judge. Not the first time we've seen this. We also saw a federal judge earlier, a couple weeks ago, in Virginia use very strong language as well in striking down that state's same-sex marriage ban. So, Noah, what's your initial takeaway from this?
Well, I think it's part of a greater trend of bringing the marriage equality movement to the South, because it's been a movement that's more traditionally associated with northeastern states and the West Coast. The battle's been pretty public in the media in California, for example. But like you're saying, in recent weeks, we've seen a lot more publicity for Virginia and Texas and even Alabama. Of course, the lawsuit filed by the Southern Poverty Law Center just earlier this month on behalf of Paul Hart, looking to bring marriage equality to Alabama. So it's definitely an encouraging sign, since the South is sort of traditionally left out of the national conversation with these things. And especially a state like Texas, it's the second most populous state in the country. It would be a huge victory to have that in Texas.
Now, you're pretty adamant in trying to make the conversation about LGBTQ plus rights more than just marriage, but for whatever reason our culture has pretty much latched onto that issue as the primary one. And another issue that's obviously very important is access and the rights, especially among athletes, is another story that's getting a lot of play here, and that associates with a lot of other things. But you know, Michael Sam trying to be the first openly gay NFL player, say openly gay because I'm pretty sure there's been plenty of other...
there have been a few that have come out after
retiring. Absolutely. So the first openly gay NFL player, and he's getting some attention after the NFL Combine, people talking about, is his performance going to be good enough to get him in the draft? And then also Jason Collins, you wrote a column in the Crimson White recently about saying how these people really need to embrace their role as, for lack of a better word, as advocates for LGBTQ plus people.
Right. Well, I don't really want to tell, you know, for example, I don't want to tell Michael Sam how to live his life or how to perform his activism, but I would make the argument that, you know, without doing anything, sort of what he would consider activism, I think he is an activist in spite of that, just by existing and just by being as public as he's being about his announcements.
But you know, at the same time, and I don't have the quote in front of me, but he also said, you know, he doesn't really have an interest in being, you know, an advocate. He just wants to be a regular guy. He just wants to play football. And what do you think about that? I mean, do you think that he has a responsibility to be really, you know, loud about his position, or should he just go about his business in a way more subdued, do you think?
Well, I don't think anyone has an obligation to perform LGBTQ identity in any way they don't want to. I think, you know, sometimes in the national conversation we have people saying things like people need to be really out and proud, or people need to do X, Y, and Z. And I think that that's absolutely up to everyone's personal identities and personal convictions and choices. But I know his publicist did say that, for example, that he wasn't going to be an activist, he was just going to be a football player. His publicist made a kind of a joke about how he wasn't going to be grand marshaling any pride parades. So I think there was definitely some negative stigma about people who do choose to perform activism in that way from Michael Sam's publicist, but I can't fault him for his choices. And I think that even just by playing to the best of his ability in the NFL, should that happen, that will be activist act enough from him. Not that it's my place to decide what is enough, but, you know.
Well, we spoke to Sue Rankin yesterday here on our program, and she's the former Penn State University women's softball coach also. She's here on campus for a few days giving a series of speeches and other events here on campus. And we spoke to her about what she thinks about it, especially with collegiate athletics. And she says that on the college level, things are actually pretty good for athletes and the way that things are working, that the NCAA has done a good job in trying to be really aggressive in the way that they try to get inclusivity in the locker room. I guess the Michael Sam story kind of leads into that, though, because, I mean, he was openly gay for, you know, a full football season, and nobody ever found out outside of the team, at least not publicly anyway. And for all intents and purposes, people seem to really support him in the locker room. So what do you think that says about that issue?
Well, I think it's certainly, it's certainly a good answer to the argument that, you know, locker room politics would be too complicated for an openly LGBT player. We've seen that kind of repeatedly struck down just, you know, by examples like Michael Sam and other openly LGBT college football players, because there have been a few, but just kind of on a lower key level,
right,
and certainly
right.
not the NFL hopeful that Michael Sam is.
Well, we're speaking to Noah Cannon here, the undergraduate student coordinator with UA's Safe Zone, a new title for Noah. How did you get involved with UA Safe Zone?
Well, the program is has a graduate student coordinator and has had for the last few years. It was established, I think, in 2008 to lead the program, and the undergraduate student coordinator was added to help supplement the growth of the program. Everyone, I'm sure, has seen the rainbow elephant emblems on professors' doors and RA's doors all around campus. So the Safe Zone program is providing an LGBTQ information and kind of campus climate training session to faculty, staff, and students and community members. We have several trainings throughout the year, and we're growing the program more and more and training more and more people. So I'm there to help supplement that growth and do some data entry and boring office stuff.
Now, I'd be
sounds fancier than that.
Well, there you go. I'd be remiss if we didn't talk about the situation in Uganda, obviously making worldwide headlines. The president of Uganda just signing a bill that basically criminalizes homosexuality. The original intent of the bill was to actually make it a capital offense. That was after a series of public backlash that it received has been watered down to only life in prison. So
right.
I guess that's a slight victory in some ways for those that would rather not see homosexual people executed for being homosexual. But, I mean, just looking across what's going on there in Uganda and some other nations across the world, what do you think about that?
I think the situation in Uganda is, you know, horrifying. It was a very kind of sobering reminder that, you know, well, it's like what my column was trying to get at was, you know, we have in this country the attitude of saying that we are post-gay in a way, which is a term I don't like because I don't think it's true. But people would say, oh, who cares if Jason Collins is gay? Or who cares if Michael Sam is gay? It's, you know, and they mean it in a noble way. They're saying it's no big deal to me, which is fine. But it's also good to remember that, you know, geographically removed from us, there are several places where what is called same-sex sexual activity is either a capital offense or punishable by life in prison. It's not just Uganda. It's punishable by death in Yemen and Afghanistan and Iran and several other countries. So it's horrifying, particularly in Uganda, because the government is publishing online lists of suspected or known LGBT people, which, you know, creates a sort of witch hunt atmosphere that's very, you know, makes it even more dangerous than it already was. So I basically see it as a reminder that we can't rest on our laurels in the United States. We have to, you know, expand the scope of what we consider LGBT liberation.
Well, what do you think about the way that the United States handled the Sochi Olympics? Obviously, Russia having some laws that are people are saying are about to be passed that are pretty bad for homosexual people in that country.
I think it's not just the United States. I think it's disappointing on a lot of levels. And then the very sort of tame versions of opposition that we saw were like, did you see the Google Doodle? That was a pride flag that Google put on their logo that was like, you know, supposedly in solidarity, but they never actually said what it was. It was lots of sort of like passive, tame resistances that were kind of like, you know, almost boycotts of Russian things that were misguided. And so no one really stepped up to the plate, to my mind, in terms of advocacy. But at the same time, I do see the argument that it would be unfair for Olympic athletes to, you know, do anything too drastic. But it is horrifying what's happening in Russia.
Well, very interesting conversation here with Noah Cannon. We appreciate you joining us as always, Noah. And, you know, I'm trying to think of a snappy remark to have to do with your pink hair. My only concern is that, you know, air traffic controllers don't mistake it for a landing zone for aircraft.
I will look out for them.
Well, very
it's
good.
The power of pink.
That's right.